Casey Forbes.
And I'm Sarah Cuvion.
And welcome to Let the Good Crimes Roll. Sarah, so I have moments that happen in my life, and I always say, like, if I was a stand-up comedian, this would be in my act.
Yeah.
So you want to hear, like, one that happened this week?
Yes, of course.
Your latest edition, or your new edition of This Would Be in My Act. So we are sitting in the living room. We're watching The Last Kingdom. Mm-hmm. Okay. And we're getting all, me and Derek, we're all into it. And I just see smoke billowing from down the hallway. And I'm like, what is that? And you smell plastic burning.
Like,
and
towards like the back where the
rooms
are?
Coming from that middle bedroom. That middle bathroom.
Oh, no.
That I never go in because it's owned by my husband and four children. Yes. And they're disgusting.
Yes.
So I just see this and I just hear him go, oh, shit. And he takes off running. And he's like, bring me some water. So, you know, I get him some water and go back. I'm like, what is happening? Well, apparently he lit a candle, but the candle was already like way at the bottom, the wax.
Yeah.
And you know how like when the wax runs out, the glass can get overheated and kind of explode.
Yeah.
Well, that's what happened. And my husband, okay, I just want to say this. I'm 38 years old. I've been burning candles for approximately, what's 38 probably minus 15, like 23?
Oh my God.
I've been burning candles for 23 years. My husband lights one candle and it blows up in his bathroom.
Oh my, that has never happened to me.
This mother effer tells me, once he's like, kids, Casey, come here out. This is a learning moment.
Stop it.
And I'm like, excuse me?
This is a learning moment.
And then he proceeds to explain to me the dangers of candles. And I'm like, bitch, I didn't know about this candle. You lit this candle unbeknownst to me. I've been burning candles for 23 years.
Safely
with no explosions.
Without incident.
You literally lit a candle one afternoon and don't tell anybody and shut the door and it blows up.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, how dare you?
I mean, now that like you know everything's okay, like it's really funny.
That's something my dad would do. Yes. You know what I mean? Like,
yes.
Let me give you some advice on burning candles. Yeah, don't let your husband do it. Yeah, that's the advice that I have.
Honestly, like, I didn't realize that about the glass.
Yeah, like, if you run out of the wax,
yeah,
basically, it'll just keep burning. What's supposed to happen in an ideal
world, they went out.
The flame should go out, but sometimes it'll keep burning and it'll heat the bottom of the glass up and it'll just go pop. And if you catch it on fire.
My gosh.
Yeah. If you need that lesson, we'll bring Derek in here and give you that lesson.
Oh my gosh. Have you told your firefighter father?
Hell no. And I'm hoping he doesn't listen to this because then I'm going to get lectured. I'm like, it wasn't me.
I don't think your dad listens to us.
No, not at all. Not at all. But I'm like, it wasn't me. I don't know what y'all are even talking about. So
I love that he brought y'all all in there.
Yeah, he's like, gather around, children. Let's go over this. I'm like, you are the thing that made it unsafe.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's hysterical.
So that's y'all's This Would Be in My Act moment. Okay, so we this week are going to be covering Danny Rowling. He's known as the Gainesville Ripper, but he's a Louisiana boy, and I'm not trying to give him Louisiana credit, but just to understand, like, this month, if you haven't picked it up, we're on kind of like a Louisiana theme. I'd like to round it out next week with another Louisiana one and then maybe go somewhere else, but I also stumbled upon The Hatchet-Wielding Hitchhiker on Netflix.
What?
Have you watched that?
No.
It's not a series. It's like one documentary. And it is ridiculous.
The Hatchet-Wielding Hitchhiker? Yeah. Oh, now I have to watch that. Yeah.
I remember like looking at the guy and like I can remember seeing memes about him, but I never knew the story behind it. So just a FYI, we probably will cover it next week because it's so ridiculous. This guy who was a hitchhiker, he caught a ride with this crazy person. They were riding together smoking weed. Mm-hmm. And the crazy person said something went down basically where he saw someone who, I don't know if the person was a black person but he was racist and he was like, look what I can do. And the guy was working. Mm-hmm. So the crazy guy runs into him and like he gets the worker is like pinned between the crazy guy's car and like this machine.
Oh my gosh.
So people are running over trying to help this man and the crazy guy gets out. And he starts attacking a woman who's trying to help him. And the hatchet-wielding hitchhiker has a hatchet. And he gets out and he hits the back of the crazy man. He hits the back of his head with the blunt side of the hatchet twice and then hacks on it once because to save the woman's life.
Yeah.
So this guy becomes like a hero, and Jimmy Kimmel does a little segment on his show. He gets all these opportunities where people are wanting to pay him and all this stuff. And well, turns out he murdered someone. Yes. So
not the crazy man.
The crazy man is crazy and went to jail.
But I didn't know if there was like more to that story we didn't
know. No. Okay. He wasn't. It was a completely random occurrence. They were riding together, and how he got so popular. And there's like this big story about where he murdered somebody. Well, he did.
Holy moly!
He murdered somebody.
Okay. So, well, now I'm definitely watching it.
So yes, watch it, and we're gonna cover that one next week because it is ridiculous. We were just laughing because, like, the thing when they interview him, he's like, he's telling the story and he's like clearly high. So, you know, you're high and you're super animated. Mm-hmm. Well, he's telling the story of how he like stopped this crazy person from hurting this woman. And he's like, I took that hatchet and I went smash, smash, smash. So then like the memes were created, and the best one was, it said, what are your intentions with my daughter? And it has him going smash, smash. Smash. It was so funny. But so y'all can look forward to that next week, and then stay tuned after this show. We're gonna do our official first
Golden Girl Minute
or two. The reference that I have for this is, it's called The World's Most Evil Killers. This is season 3, episode 14. I found it on Prime Video, but it was through what's called Freevee. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Mm-hmm. Freevee is like an app, Hulu or Peacock, where they show stuff and you can watch it for free. So, of course, it had advertisements. So, Danny Harold Rowling was born in Shreveport, Louisiana on May 26, 1954. His parents became pregnant almost immediately following their wedding, much to the angst of his father, who was a police officer. I don't know if he just didn't want kids or he didn't want them that soon.
Yeah.
But his mom was 20, so they were very young. His father was just a very violent man. He was an awful person. So he's born, and 18 months later, his little brother's born.
Oh, that's very quick.
On top of all of that, their mother suffers from like mental illness. And she's not really, I mean, she clearly loves the boys, and she goes back and forth. Like, she'll take the boys, she'll leave, because the dad is very physically and emotionally abusive towards Danny and his brother. Mm-hmm. And also towards the mother. I mean, so there's multiple times where she leaves and comes back and leaves. So it's a very tumultuous upbringing. Danny is told multiple times, like, he is useless, he wouldn't amount to nothing. And all of this was just at a super, super young age. So Danny, as a child, starts sneaking out of his house after his parents go to sleep. And it started out almost innocently. Like, he would go to the neighbor's house where it was a quote unquote normal family, and he would watch them through the window. It was almost like he wanted to pretend like he was a part of their like normal upbringing. Right. But as he grew older, that wanting of normal turned into like resentment. Like, why do these people get to have normal families and I'm stuck with this a-hole for a father and then my mom who won't protect me? By the time he was 13, his peeking through windows went from an innocent motivations to wanting like sexual gratification
from him. Like a peeping Tom at this point.
Yes. And he's gotten quite the reputation of being a peeping Tom. Like, he's gotten caught.
Oh no.
He's in and out of juvie, all sorts of stuff. And so by the time he's 16, he has this reputation of being a peeping Tom. Him and his father, their relationship is just non-existent, and they get into like an altercation. Danny had started drinking. He was drunk. He was arrested for getting a fight with his dad. And remember, his dad was a policeman. So, I mean, they're on his side. He goes to juvenile detention for 2 weeks. And upon getting out, he decides that he doesn't want to go back and live with his parents. So he drops out of high school and he joins the Air Force, which I thought was kind of weird. But again, this is like the 1960s. Mm-hmm. This was a long time ago. It wasn't like they required you to have a high school diploma or a GED or anything like that. At first, he did great in the Air Force. Like, he enjoyed the structure of it. But the problem is that he had to quit doing alcohol and drugs, and he just wouldn't stop doing it. After less than a year, he was discharged. They don't say if it was under bad circumstances. He was just basically let go.
Yeah.
And once again, he is living back in his home in Shreveport. So it's 19...
Like, with his parents?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It's 1974. He's 20. And he starts going to a Pentecostal church. And, you know, people seem to think he's getting his life together. He meets a really nice girl and they get married. And 1 year after they get married, they have a little girl together. While he's devoted to the church side of things, he's not devoted to what the church is teaching him as far as the man should, at very little, like, help provide financially to the home. It shouldn't drink in excess. But after 3 years of marriage, the wife decides, I can't do this anymore. You're a drunk. You're not working. It's not good for our child. She files for divorce. Mm-hmm. And he's devastated. And so now he's 23 years old. He failed at high school. He failed at the Air Force. And now he failed in his marriage. And he, again, is back living at home with his father. At the same time that Danny's wife files for divorce, he tries to get a job. So he gets a job working at a bakery, you know, trying to prove to her that he could maintain a job. Well, he gets into an accident with some of the equipment and loses one of his fingers.
Oh, dang.
After that, instead of like bouncing back, you know, recovering from this, he decides to steal his father's gun. And he went on a spree of armed robberies from Mississippi all the way to Georgia.
Oh, so that's okay. Yeah. I can see that. Mm-hmm. Jeez. Yeah.
Good, like good call, wife.
Like a normal reaction.
Yes. You get your finger cut off and you just go on a armed robbery
that's
spree.
That's immediately what comes to mind.
Exactly. So he's arrested. He spends 8 years in prison. Mm-hmm. So it's 1989. He's 35 years old. And once again, he is back living with mom and dad.
Oh, dear.
And it constantly like reiterated to him, you have failed at everything you have done. Mm-hmm. He gets a job working at a local restaurant. And on November 4th, 1989, he's fired for missing his shift. Danny is very adamant that he didn't miss that shift, that the manager changed the schedule and didn't notify him.
Yeah.
He goes crazy on this manager. He's just like, you did this because you don't like me. And this actually isn't normal for Danny. Danny actually tends to internalize things, mm-hmm. and then it comes out in some other way. But this time he just exploded. It was also the first day that he killed somebody.
Uh-oh.
So he had been infatuated with a 24-year-old girl named Julie Grissom. She worked at a department store. He had just spotted her one day and he started stalking her. Like he just wanted to learn about her. And one of the things he learned was she lived in Shreveport with her dad. And it was her dad, her, and her nephew, who was 8-year-old Sean. Mm-hmm. I don't know the backstory about Sean's parents. I just know that in this house there was Pawpaw, there was Aunt Julie, and there was nephew Sean.
Okay.
So on the day he gets fired, he decides that he wants to accomplish something. He wants to be a winner at something. And he decides that he wants Julie. So he goes to Julie's house. He breaks into the back door. He makes his way into the home and he stabs Grandpa Tom and 8-year-old Sean to death.
No.
Yes. And they said that, and I don't like to include these deep things, but like Sean's death was, they said it was so gruesome that like when he stabbed, it got hung up in the ground. So it like went straight through him. 8-year-old. So it's 3 generations of people. So he then makes his way to Julie where he ties her up. He rapes her and he also stabs her to death. One of the things that we learned that was like his MO was after he would rape and murder his victim, his female victim, he would clean them up, wash their clothes, and then he would pose them in a provocative way. And some of the experts come on and they say, well, the reason for this could be like a theory is that, you know, a lot of murderers like to take pictures, like to have ways that they can go back and like revisit the crime. And for him, he might have had some sort of photographic memory where if he could take up like a mental snapshot of the last time he saw her, that's how he could use that in the future, like get off on what he had done and all of that. So after that, 2 days go by and obviously family doesn't hear from them. And so detectives go out and they find, you know, these people had been murdered.
I'm just at such a loss. Like the trigger was him getting fired from his job and being so mad at the manager.
Yes.
But instead of taking it out on the manager, which I'm not saying you should, but instead of taking it out on the manager,
he takes it out on all these people.
Who, if he was stalking her, she probably didn't even know he existed.
No, probably not. Like he probably saw her in the mall one day.
Which is scary, because then you're like, oh my God, that could happen to me.
Exactly.
You know?
And this is also another reason why it's good to have dogs.
It's also another reason why it's good to just stay home.
I know. Work remote. That is correct. So the murder gave Danny just this like courage to stand up to his dad, because in his like deluded mind, he's thinking, I failed at everything, but look, I accomplished this. I set out to do this and I did it. And so he goes back to his dad's house. The two of them get into the worst fight that they've ever gotten to. He pulls a gun on his dad, shoots him. The dad doesn't die, but he loses an eye and he loses an ear. How this happened, I have no clue. They just like throw that in there and you're like, what?
Wait, is that another thing he's failed at? Instead of killing his dad, he just took out his eye and ear.
But I'm like, how does that, like, can we back that up just a little bit? Because that was another thing. This is clearly like a British production team and the narrator, he's so into how he, like, this is how he talks. And he's like, and all I can think of is when I read like Harry Potter, when I read anything that's meant to be like in England, that's exactly how I read it in my head. And then she grabbed her purse and went out the front door. And you're like, oh, okay. You're very excited to tell us this story. So once he shoots his dad, he basically flees. And again, this is like the 1980s, 90s. So it's not like social media where be on the lookout for this guy. I mean, so he takes off. He leaves Shreveport. He stops in Tallahassee and he robs somebody. And then he goes to Gainesville. Why he chose Gainesville? I mean, one of the speculations was because it was a college town. Mm-hmm. But he passed up like 7 college towns to get there.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. But so he chooses Gainesville. When he stopped in Tallahassee too, he bought a bunch of camp. He went to like a military shop and bought like a camping gear. He bought, they called it a K-bar. I called it the Rambo knife. Yeah. You know, he buys all of this stuff to prepare him to basically ravage victims.
Oh my goodness gracious.
And he sets up camp near the campus. I think it's the University of Florida in Gainesville. Mm-hmm. He's in a tent, but it's in this very densely populated forest that's close by. And one of the things that it's noticed, like looking back now, is that the women that he focused on looked exactly like his ex-wife. Very small, brunettes, pretty girls. So that's kind of the craziness of it all. So his first two victims in Gainesville were roommates Sonia Larson and Christina Powell. They were 17 and 18 year olds, freshmen, just moved into their apartment. Oh. It's August of 1990. They're so excited to be starting the University of Florida. They have no idea that there is a crazy man that has spotted them through a window. Like basically they didn't have the blinds down and he spotted them. And he became enamored with them. So he just stared and watched them for hours. Well, after the lights went out, he used a screwdriver to open up one of the sliding doors. And he decided that he wanted one of the girls over the other. So the girl that he wanted, her name was Christina. She was asleep on the couch when he walked in. Obviously, she was out, so she didn't see him. So he decides to look around and find the other girl because he needed to kill her so that she wouldn't hear the first girl screaming. So Sonia was asleep in her room. He comes in. And he jumps on top of her. He covers her mouth with tape and he stabs her to death. Like she didn't have a chance to scream anything. And then he goes back downstairs and he wakes up Christina, puts duct tape over her mouth so she can't scream. He tapes her up. He uses his knife to cut her clothes off. He rapes her. And then he lays her flat on her stomach and he stabs her in the back and she dies. He does the same thing that he did to his very first victim, Julie. Mm-hmm. He cleans her body up really good. He washes her clothes and then he poses her in like this very provocative position. So those similarities are there and it's just crazy. And as of right now, you know, there's no cell phones, there's no nothing. So nobody really knows that anything's wrong with Sonia and Christina. I mean, all their parents are just thinking, okay, we tried to call, they haven't called back. So this gives Danny like time to continue on his killing spree. So one day after he does this, he spots a woman by the name of Krista Hoyt. Now, Krista, I think, was like in her early 20s. She was a community college student and she worked part-time. She worked the night shift at a local sheriff's office. Her death was the most gruesome of them all, but
even more gruesome? Goodness. Yes,
it gets worse. She, of all the victims, she looked the most like his ex-wife. Mm-hmm. So that kind of explains that violence. He breaks in the same way that he broke into Sonia and Christina's apartment. He uses a screwdriver and wedges open the sliding door. Well, when he gets in there, she's not home. And so he waits until 11 a.m. because I remember she works the night shift.
Yeah.
When she comes in, he puts her in a headlock and she passes out. He binds her wrists. He gags her. He rapes her. And one of the professionals that's on here said the only thing that's maybe a little bit of solace is he did stab her in the back, but he hit an aorta vein. Mm-hmm. And they said she would have died within seconds. Like, it wouldn't have been this long, painful yeah. death. Like, so she died. Then he cleaned her body up. But this is where it gets really gruesome. He beheaded her.
Why?
And he posed her to where her head could see her provocative position that her body was in. That's where it came back into play. They said of all the victims, she was like, looked a lot like his yeah. ex-wife. So they think maybe this was just a resentful killing. I mean, poor Krista.
Goodness gracious.
Had nothing to do with any of this. She was just a victim that he spotted and that he decided to do this to. So again, he killed 3 people in 48 hours.
Yeah.
Nobody knew anyone was dead yet. Mm-hmm. And so he just continued on. So not far from where he was set up in where his campsite was, he spotted another woman, a woman named Tracy Paulus. And she was walking back and forth. She was 23. She was walking back and forth to her apartment. She was a beauty queen, just a stunning, stunning woman. Well, during all of this time when he spots her, it comes out that 3 women have died. So it's out there. They don't know if it's a serial killer, but they have their suspicions, right. But it's very new.
Yeah.
That they found these 3 college students murdered. So Tracy is heard on the phone where she tells a friend of hers, like, I'm really nervous because I'm home alone. Her roommate, they don't say if he's a boyfriend or not. He was so cute. His name is Manny. He's like this 6'3", big burly mm-hmm. guy, but it just says that they're roommates.
Yeah.
And she tells her friend on the phone, like, this really is upsetting. And like, if Manny doesn't get home soon, I'm going to go stay where I feel safe. I just don't feel safe. Well, Manny was working. So Manny comes home. He kind of looks all around and he says, look, everything seems fine. Locks the doors. He goes to his room and goes to bed. You know, she is in, I don't know if she was on the couch or where she was, but she was in a different part of the house and goes to sleep. Danny decides that Tracy's going to be his next victim. Mm-hmm. And so he breaks into her house the same way, using that screwdriver.
Yeah.
He doesn't realize, though, that there is another guy there. Uh-huh. And so he goes upstairs and he notices that this big guy is asleep. Now, he knows that if he tries to attract Tracy, she's going to scream. He won't have a chance. So he starts stabbing Manny while he's sleeping, and Manny puts up a fight.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you're sleeping and you get stabbed, you're already at a disadvantage.
Exactly.
So unfortunately, Danny's able to overpower him just because he had the advantage. I mean, this poor guy was bleeding to death.
Yeah.
But he put up one hell of a fight, from what we understand. This is where it makes no sense. I just don't understand this. Tracy hears the commotion. Uh-huh. She goes upstairs and she sees this guy who's dressed in all black with a ski mask, looking like the dude from Scream, stabbing her big burly roommate. She runs in her room and locks the door.
Oh no.
Why would you not run out? I would, like, I don't care. I could be naked. I would run out screaming.
Well, yeah, that's like a nightmare of mine, is seeing a masked individual like attacking me or yes! someone else, you know? That's yes. scary as hell.
But I just didn't understand, because even the guy in the documentary is like, the only thing separating her from this killer is a flimsy door.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't like this college town. It's like, you know, it's just a little flimsy door.
It's not up thin. To code. No. Yes. So she's in her room, you know, I guess just praying that somebody will come and save yeah. her.
Is there no window that she could climb out of?
I don't know.
Well,
so
I guess not.
Danny goes over to the door, kicks it open,
yeah.
and does the same thing that he does to all the other women. He doesn't behead her, but the same thing. He ties her up. He rapes her, stabs her in the back. She dies. Mm-hmm. So at this point, and again, he poses her and all of that stuff. At this point, it's becoming like blatantly clear that there's a serial killer.
Yes.
There's just too many similarities. I mean, there's the same screwdriver, type of screwdriver used to break into the doors. It's clear if there's somebody in the way, that somebody is killed to get them out the way, and they, you know, and then the body's being posed. During all this time, you got to remember, this is all within a matter of a couple of days.
Yeah.
And Manny and Tracy's bodies were soon discovered on August 28th, which was 3 days after the first body was discovered. So wow. He killed 5 people in 3 days.
I'm familiar with this story, but I didn't realize it took place in such a short amount of time.
Yes. I mean, it was very
insane.
Yeah. Everyone knows what's going on. There's a serial killer on the loose, and police are just trying to take notice of people walking by, and some police noticed 2 men that are just kind of acting suspiciously. So they just kind of follow them, and they notice that they go down to like this densely wooded area. And so they follow them into the wooded area, and there's a campsite set up with tents and a fire. Well, the 2 men are Danny Rowling and his drug dealer friend.
Oh.
Danny is able to get away. Mm-hmm. Like, he's able to get away before he kind of recognizes he's being followed.
Right.
So he just leaves. The drug dealer just kind of, you know, he doesn't think he has a reason to be running away because he's not involved in any of this. Mm-hmm. And the police come up and they find this campsite and they find all this stuff in it. Well, prior to this happening, there was a credit union that had been robbed at gunpoint. And when they open up the campsite, they notice there's a bunch of money with pink dye on it. And so they're immediately like, oh my gosh, these have to be the people that robbed this credit union.
Right.
But they also find, and they can't figure it out, they find a gun, they find a ski mask, they find black pants, and they're just like, wow, this is like just
they found a murder kit basically.
They did, but they didn't piece it together that this was also the serial killer. So but what they did do that was right was they boxed everything up and they sent it away for evidence. They're like, this will probably come back into play, and it does, because we later find out that there's like one of the girls, her pubes are found on the sleeping bag where Danny was sleeping, and they don't know who the other guy is. They don't know Danny Rowling. Manny, the guy that was killed, his blood is found on the scene. The gun that was used is the gun that was described in the bank robbery. It just all kind of comes together and makes sense. So on August 30th, police identified a 19-year-old named Edward Humphrey, who lived in Manny and Tracy's apartment. So those were the last two victims. Edward had clear mental health issues and was off of his meds, but like, he punched his own grandmother. They got into a fight. I mean, he's just totally off. And so the police are like looking at him like he might be the Gainesville Ripper. During this time, Danny steals a car and he makes his way down to Tampa. As he's going, he's committing multiple like armed robberies. Mm-hmm. And when he's in Ocala, Florida, he tries to rob a convenience store in broad daylight. And like the cops come in, they arrest him. They still don't know who he is. All they know is they book him into jail for robbery. When Danny is captured, they take DNA swabs and they put it in like the system in Florida. I mean, because DNA is not what it is today, but this is like 1990. So they're at the point where they know to take the DNA swabs and like put it in like a data system in Florida. So Gainesville is just scared to death. Edward Humphrey, they realize thanks to DNA that like he's not the Gainesville Ripper. He's a grandmother puncher. Yeah. But he's not the Gainesville Ripper.
Still not the best kind of guy, but not
a murderer. I don't want him living in my apartment complex. Right, but he didn't murder anybody yet. Okay. So Gainesville, like, they're just scared to death because it's like, okay, well, we have a serial killer out here. What is going on? But the killings, like, they pretty much stop. So police are like, okay, he must have left or he must have got arrested somewhere else. The gun that was found at the campsite where Danny was, it was registered to a man that was in Sarasota. They track him down and they say, you know, what's the story with this? And the guy admits to, he said, well, I sold it to like this transient for cash. And they're like, okay, well, is there anything about this guy that you have any clue, anything about him? Like, well, he was missing a finger. They take this information back to the FBI and they're all having a meeting, and the FBI guy goes, holy shit, like at the Sonia Christina murders, this is very bizarre. I don't know how this all came about, but basically there's a piece of paper towel. And you can tell the retired FBI agent is trying to delicately say this, but the killer used it to like wipe off the after effects of the rape, if you follow me.
Yes.
But it had blood on it, so it left imprints. And like on one side was the imprint of his yoo-hoo, and the other side was an imprint of his hand, and the hand was missing a finger. And that's when it all came together that the bank robber is also the serial killer.
Oh my goodness.
So now we have to find him. Where is he at? So the most disturbing of the things that were found in...
I'm sorry.
I know. Can you imagine? You imagine like picking that up and you're like, is that a penis? And then on the other side, you're like, is that a hand like, missing a finger?
What is happening
What
here?
Side is more bizarre? I don't know.
I'm sorry. Visual got me.
Oh, okay. I know. They're like so nonchalant when they talk. You're like... Like, he didn't need to throw that away.
I know. Like, I guess, like, police officers are so jaded. Luck? Like, they've seen this all before, and it, I guess, can be so casual.
And, like, I didn't need to know that on one side was, like, an outline of his wiener. You know what I mean? Like, you could have just said, and the outline, on one of the sides, an outline was a hand missing a finger.
Yes, exactly.
Oh yeah, you know, he just wanted to add that in there. Yes. It's like, if I had to see that, y'all have to visualize it, okay? So, Yeah. You know, they find all this stuff at the campsite. They mm-hmm. find the pubic hair. They find the blood. But then they also find audio tapes because Danny, like all killers, are so dumb.
Yeah.
Yes. In the audio tapes, he doesn't give like a full confession, but mm-hmm. he kind of does. And it's like a journal where he's too lazy to write. So yeah. he decided to like, he's like, I know what I did was awful and I'm going to be on the run for the rest of my life.
Oh my gosh.
So now I'm going to head to Tampa.
Yeah. Wait, so he laid all this out and then like left it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
Yep.
Okay. Just like a giant arrow pointing to where he went.
Right, and so. You think he would like change directions.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Maybe head up yeah. to Georgia. No, yeah, he continued no. to go down towards Tampa. Police in Shreveport, because this is kind of getting like a lot of attention, they notice a lot of similarities between what happened in Gainesville and what happened to Julie. I mean, she mm-hmm. was posed.
Yeah.
So they reach out to them and say, hey, we think there might be a connection here. We don't know who did this, but the similarities are just are so there. Mm-hmm. So that's 8 people that have potentially all been murdered by a serial killer. So again, like I said, all of this is great, except that the Gainesville police, they don't know where this guy is. He's actually sitting in a jail in Ocala, like we had said earlier. Mm-hmm. He got arrested for that. His DNA was tested, and what they decided to do was, all of this was new, they put it in a like a DNA testing thing to see like if there's a match against any evidence across Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And bam, it was all over the place in yeah. these 5 killings in Gainesville.
That screen lit up with matches.
Yes. So he was sent up to Gainesville where he was indicted on the 5 killings of these people. And at first he professed his innocence, but he then kind of started confessing, but he didn't like confess to the police himself. He chose like random inmates to be his spokespersons, mm-hmm. I guess. Spokespeople. You're like, Ricky! Ricky, you want to speak on my behalf? Yeah? You go with that? Okay.
Oh, man.
Can you imagine, so like, them coming in?
So he just, like, really, like, they were his spokesperson? He didn't just, like, confide in them?
No, not at first.
Okay.
But then, I guess, you know, as inmates typically aren't the best spokespeople,
mm-hmm.
He just said, Ricky, you told him the wrong damn thing. Just let me do it myself. That's what happened.
I made an outline for you, Ricky.
Exactly. I wrote it out line by line, and you screwed it up. So he comes in, and he tells the police that he has multiple personality disorder and that this Danny guy is a good guy and he should not be put to death. He's a good guy. Mm-hmm. But he has this personality named Gemini, who's cuckoo ca-choo. Yeah.
That's the one doing all the killings.
He's the one killing everybody okay. while Danny blissfully sleeps. Yes. And I mean, of course, like, we're in Florida. Nobody bought it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't yeah. care who killed it. Y'all all gonna burn for it. So he originally goes to court for the burglaries and mm-hmm. stuff in Ocala, and he's found guilty. So in September 1991, Danny was given a life sentence for attempted armed robbery and aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer. That was a mandatory life sentence.
Mm-hmm.
2 years later, he was indicted on the 5 counts of murder and the Gainesville murders. And at first he did profess his innocence, but then when he stood in front of the judge, when they say, are you innocent or guilty? He says he's guilty.
Oh.
So the prosecutors are all standing around expecting him to say innocence by means of like insanity.
Right.
No, he stood up there. He gave full confessions. And like people in the audience are just like, so if he's confessing, does that mean he did it? Like, I mean, do we still have to go through the court process? Like,
yeah,
it was just a shot. Even the prosecutors were like, I don't know what to do about this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if they say they're guilty, then you don't need to have a trial.
Exactly. So. Yeah. So he said he was guilty, but it still had to be determined if he should be given life in prison or if he should be.
Penalty.
Yeah. The jury unanimously gave they said, we believe he should be put to death. And the judge agreed with them. And so on October 25th, 2006, Danny had another surprise because it was his execution date. And before he went, he left his cell to be executed. He wrote down a full confession of the murders of the Grissoms. He said it was him.
Oh,
nobody helped
gosh.
Him. He murdered the Grissoms.
Yeah.
And he was executed at 52 years old via lethal injection on October 25th, 2006 in Florida. And he tried for years to get appeals.
Yeah.
His last appeal was denied the night before he was executed.
Yeah.
So gave a full confession.
I wonder why he tried to appeal it if he he just tried to appeal the death penalty portion of it?
I think so. Yeah, I mean, he really didn't want to be put to death. He really didn't want to.
Well, he should have thought about that. I'm sure the people he killed didn't want to be put to death either.
There's like an 8-year-old who didn't want to be put to death either. So you will get zero sympathy from me.
Sorry, not sorry.
Yeah, not even a little bit. So that is the case of the Gainesville. It's like the Shreveport Gaines. It should be the Shreveport Ripper.
Well, I'm fine with letting Florida have this one.
I know. Sorry, Florida. We love you, but you can take them all. So that was the case of that. So tune in next week for, we'll have one that's not as, I mean, it's pretty sad, but it has funny moments.
Yeah. The axe guy?
The axe. The
hitchhiker axe man? Was that
the hatchet? The hatchet. What is it? The hatchet toting hitchhiker?
Yeah, the hatchet hitchhiker.
The hatchet hitchhiker.
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Okay. So since we all have that bloody taste in our mouth.
That was a bad one.
It was. That one was
like... you did it very well, but it was a bad one.
You say that. It was pretty gruesome. Now it's time for our Golden Girl Minute.
Golden Girl Minute.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant.
Or two. Because it'll probably be lower than that, longer than that. So I'm just going to kind of, I'm going to kind of give an overview of like what the episodes are and like just the funniest moments to me.
Yeah.
And then I have some like little trivia things
about the episode. I feel like this is very much needed because that was such a dark story. So I'm glad you've gotten this going.
We're going to leave Gainesville. We're going to go to Miami.
Okay.
So we meet Dorothy and Coco. Dorothy is a substitute teacher and Coco is the house cook.
Oh, and this is the pilot episode?
This is the pilot episode. Okay. And what's crazy about this one is that like the everything from like the way the house is set up, things just like subtle things change.
Yeah.
And I don't understand about pilot episodes. I mean, I guess they're not sure if they're going to
take off. I would say like pilot episodes are like a whole different animal. So sometimes you don't see them released and like in the pilot episode, things can be completely different than what you actually see on TV.
Yeah. So until they figure out if they're going to pick up or not. So Dorothy comes in and it's just funny because this could not be done today. Mm-hmm. But she tells Coco that she got in trouble because she told two students that they were too ugly to teach. And now she has to defend herself to the children's parents.
That's very funny.
Like one girl was named Tiffany and she had a bald head and a nose ring. So to me, that's tame compared to some of these kids today. So then we meet Rose. She comes in and she's just complaining about how, oh God, it's just like negative people after negative people. And we find out she works at grief counseling. So yeah, of course it's negative people. Then we meet Blanche. And if you notice, which I didn't notice before, Blanche in this episode does not have a Southern accent. And there's a reason for that, which we'll go over in our trivia section.
Okay. But
so she comes in and she asks Dorothy if she can borrow her mink stole. And Dorothy's like, it's Miami in June. Only cats are wearing fur. So I'm like, okay, Dorothy, are you teaching summer school? That's where some of this doesn't come in. So we learn that Blanche is going out with this guy named Harry. And she's so excited because he still has his own teeth and his own hair. Which is so exciting. But it always crosses the line, according to Rose, if they have hair in their ears. That's a big deal.
Well, okay.
Yeah. So both women just lament on how they wish they were younger again. By both women, I mean like Dorothy and Rose. And Dorothy tells this story how she's in the teacher's lounge and she's talking to these women that are like in their 20s. Mm-hmm. And she just like, while she's talking to them, she's like, I just forgot how old I was. And then I get in my car and I look in the rearview mirror and I was shocked at what I saw. And Rose is like, well, who was it? And she's like, it was me, you dipstick. So Blanche pops in again and they're like, okay, well, who's Harry? Tell us about this Harry guy. And she's like, she gives like a whole array of reasons why he's great. But she's like, he's still interested. And Rose, of course, is like, in what? And Dorothy gives like the best line of this show is, Rose, if you have to ask, it doesn't matter anymore. So the big news in all of this is that Harry has proposed and he wants an answer tonight, but they've only been seeing each other for the past week, which is a terrible sign.
Yeah, that's a red flag right there.
Yeah. So Dorothy tries to be that friend where she's excited, but Rose is like, okay, something's not even right here. I mean, like if they get married, where are we going to live? What do we have as collateral? A gay cook? So Blanche tells the girls that, you know, she doesn't know what she's going to tell him, but, you know, she'll know when it comes out of her mouth, to which Dorothy's like, it's not a belt. You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean you'll know? It's a big deal. So the doorbell rings and the girls think it's Harry, but it's not. It's Sophia, Dorothy's mom. And she comes in and she tells them their home burned down and that, and Dorothy's like, well, why didn't you call me? And she goes, well, I am a completely independent woman. No, I need you to go pay the cab driver. So this is also when we find out that Sophia had a stroke, which destroyed the part of her brain that like censors what she says. The
filter. Yeah.
Yeah. And so after that, you know, that's why Blanche doesn't get that upset when she says she looks like a prostitute. Mm-hmm. So Harry then arrives and is charming to everyone except for Sophia. And after Harry leaves, Sophia goes, "The man is a scuzzball." And originally, I didn't know this, but the line was supposed to be, "The man is a douchebag."
Oh,
the
really?
Executives were so disgusted by the word, they made her change it to scuzzball.
That's funny.
So Rose begins to feel sad, and she goes in this big speech about how, you know, you get married, and your kids leave, and your husband dies, and, like, Dorothy's all loving and charming, and then Sophia's like, "Get a poodle." And we're just like, okay. So Rose, Dorothy, and Coco, they're just like sitting on the lanai and they're waiting for Blanche to come home because they want to know what her answer is. Dorothy's like, "What am I doing up? Like, I have to substitute for a teacher who got shot by a student.
Oh my gosh,
I should get my sleep in." Blanche comes in and she starts telling the girls all about her night, all except whether she said yes or no to Harry. And so finally, we find out that she says yes, she's going to marry him, and it's next week. So if you're watching the episode on Hulu, it breaks away to commercial. So before the commercial, Blanche is sitting down. Her hair's a little bit longer, and it's Dorothy, Rose, and Coco. Uh-huh. It immediately, when it comes back, because there's no commercials on the Hulu one, it's just Dorothy and Rose, and Blanche's hair's really short.
Oh.
Like, it's a noticeable difference. Yeah. It's only for a second. And there's a reason for that, and we'll go over that. So y'all just kind of keep that in the back of your minds. So, you know, after Blanche goes to bed, Rose is like, "You know, I dated Charlie for 2 years before we got married." And Dorothy's like, "Well, I didn't because, you know."
Yeah.
I had to get married to Stan because I was pregnant. And Rose is like, "You had a blowgun wedding?" And
a blowgun wedding?
And Dorothy said, "In the Amazon, but in Queens, we call it a shotgun wedding." And that's when Rose is like, "Well, maybe that's why he left you, because, you know, you forced him into it." And then she's like, "He left me 38 years later for a stewardess half his age, and they're living in Maui now." So Rose and Dorothy, they're just complaining about waking up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. And Sophia says, "I don't have that problem. Every morning, like clockwork, at 7 a.m., I pee. Unfortunately, I don't wake up till 8. So... I was like,
Sophia.
So it's wedding day. Rose just has this sick feeling about Harry and thinks that she should confront Blanche and tell her not to marry him. Well, Dorothy won't let her. So Blanche, on the other hand, she just can't quit crying and she's so happy. Rose continually like tries to like physically interject her opinion, to which it's intercepted by Dorothy. Like at one point, Dorothy has her in a headlock. Mm-hmm. The minister arrives and everyone's waiting. And they're waiting. And the minister says he can only wait so long because, you know, it's Miami and there's a lot of funerals. He's got to bury Mr. Pincus. So there's a knock at the door and police show up and they let Blanche know that Harry had been arrested for being a bigamist and he has 6 wives. Harry did leave Blanche a letter basically saying where he really liked her. She was different and he hopes that she will write him in prison one day. And Blanche just basically says, "I just want my heart to stop and I just want to be buried with Mr. Pincus." So it's a few weeks later, Dorothy, Rose, and Sophia, they're all in the lanai. There's no Coco. And Blanche comes out and she's bubbly and happy. And they basically say, she says, "The only way I got through this was because I was here with my 2 best friends and y'all really were the reason why. And I don't need to be worried about men. Like, y'all are my family." And so at the very end, the girls are all consoling each other. And this is an ironic point that I saw in a trivia thing. The last thing that Dorothy says is that no matter what, if any of us get married, we will all stick together. Well, sorry, spoiler alert if you hadn't seen this, but like in the very last episode, Dorothy gets married and leaves.
Leaves, yeah.
It's like, damn it, Dorothy. Okay, so I'm just going to do a couple of trivia things. That's the end of season 1, episode 1, the pilot one, the engagement. So go watch it. Get a kick out of it because it is so, the whole series is just funny. All right, so this is from IMDb. The website. So if it's wrong, blame them. That's our theory for it. If it's wrong, blame them. So Rue McClanahan, who is Blanche, doesn't have a southern accent in this episode because prior to filming, the director told her he didn't want her want to hear it. After the show was picked up from the pilot episode, McClanahan went to the producers and offered to play Blanche as a modified Mae West-style character. The producers asked her why she doesn't do it along with a southern accent, because she's from Oklahoma mm-hmm. in real life, so she can do one.
Yeah.
And at that point, the character Blanche Devereaux was fully realized, complete with a southern accent.
Okay.
So the character Sophia Petrillo was originally supposed to be a recurring guest character, but test audiences loved the character so much that after the pilot was filmed and aired, the decision was made to write out Coco, not because he was gay, but to make room for Sophia as the fourth main character.
Mm-hmm. I don't think I've ever seen the pilot episode.
You need to watch the pilot. It's good. It's a good one. Well, that pretty much is like what it was. Like, a lot of people thought it was because he was gay, but Susan Harris, who was the creator of the show, came in and said, no, test audiences just fell in love with Sophia.
Right.
According to Bea Arthur, who's Dorothy, in her one-woman Broadway show, Just Between Friends, Sophia has a line in this episode, that's what we talked about, that had to be changed from its original to a less intense version. The line, "the man is a scuzzball," was originally "the man is a douchebag," until the network executives demanded the change. Mm-hmm. Sophia and the guy that plays the cop that walks in, his name is Meshach Taylor. He was on Designing Women.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. They would go on to appear together in the cult comedy movie Mannequin 2 years later. The episode was the highest rated program of the week, beating out The Cosby Show. This was the first known instance of the word pee, meaning urination, heard on network television. The scene where Dorothy and Blanche hug Rose is used in the show's opening credits, but from a different angle. And then, like I said, Dorothy promises that even if they all get married, they'll still live together. This series ends with Dorothy getting married and moving to her groom's home out of state. And that is your Golden Girl Minute. And the card attached. I hope y'all had as much fun as I did rewatching that.
Yeah, and you can rewatch along with us. Just watch the second episode of season one, like, for next week.
Yeah, next week we'll, and hopefully we'll, because I don't do it word for word, but just capture, like,
yeah.
And that way, if you've never seen it or you wonder, like, what everybody's talking about, you kind of get a understanding of why we love it so much. So, well, Sarah, is there anything you want to add?
No, ma'am, I think we're good.
Okay. Well, we will see y'all next week. Go watch The Hatchet Wielding Hitchhiker. On Netflix, if you want to watch it before we cover it next week, and we will see y'all then.
Bye, guys.